This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFTA's Board of Directors, Associate Station Manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
You are tuned to Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander, joined today by two guests on the phone. I am very happy to welcome Beth Hunsdorfer and Molly Parker, who are the reporters who broke the story most recently about Choate Developmental Center and the abuses that have been going on there, as well as other institutions in Illinois since that one was broken. So welcome to the show, Beth and Molly. I so appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Vicki.
Why don't we start out by the two of you introducing yourselves? And Molly, if you could go first and talk a little bit about why this story? Why did this one happen? How did this one happen for you?
Yeah, I'm Molly Parker, and I was reporting on these stories with Lee Enterprises, which owns newspapers across the country, including the Southern Illinois and in Carbondale, Illinois, near Choate. Just a little update, as I recently joined Capital News Illinois, and I'm now an official colleague with Beth, and proud to be so. So that's my introduction, and I think you ask about, you know, what brought this story about. And just to clarify, are you talking about this story about this most recent one about the other facilities?
Well, I can give people a little historical perspective on how you began your ventures in this story. Yeah.
Yeah. No, thank you for clarifying. We, Beth and I both had been following developments out of Choate, which is in downstate Illinois and Anna, as a couple of years ago, there were a number of people arrested there, employees arrested, including the three top administrators. And while the charges against them were later dropped, some of the other charges were not. And people went on to plead guilty in some cases to cases of abuse. This involved an array of offenses over a number of years, but included kicking someone in the ribs and breaking their ribs, punching them, forcing them to drink hot sauce, covering up or failing to report abuse, because everyone who's an employee is a mandated reporter. If they see something, they are required to report it. So we just saw a litany of news coming out of the state's attorney's office at the time and wanted to know more. You know, why is this happening? Is this rash of arrests? It was at least 12 since 2019, which is a lot out of any one employer. So we started digging into, you know, is this systemic? What is going on in Illinois?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Particularly in this institution at Anna.
And Molly, why don't you go ahead and, or Beth, excuse me, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and also then talk a little bit about your most recent work, and we'll dig into the details in a bit.
My name is Beth Hunsdorfer. I've been an investigative reporter for 20 years. I worked in the Metro East with the Belleville News Democrat for a lot of that time, but joined Capital News 2021. November of 2021. And as soon as I got there, there were these, you know, rash of arrests that were coming out of Choate. And I think they have, as a result of the reporting, have done some things to address some of the concerns that are happening there. But I think it's a critical time. If they're going to transition away from being a DD center, then we have to have our fingers on what's happening there. Where are they moving people? How are they moving people? What kind of supports are they putting in place so those placements are successful? Because it's stressful for anybody to move. It's always stressful for someone to move. But somebody who may have a developmental disability, they're going to behave in a different kind of way when they're stressed. and they may have behaviors, and that there has to be supports in place for them to make those transitions successful.
Now, many of us in disability world here in Illinois have been aware that there was probably stuff going on that was not appropriate at the developmental centers since way back in 2008, I believe it was, that Equip for Equality did a report recommending the closure of Choate Developmental Center. And since then, we have the book by Barry Smoot, Failure to Protect, who had an inside view of what was going on with the, some of the abuses there and the way that the culture of the institution was preventing people from being accountable for what they were doing. Do you see that changing at all in the next few months? Because it seems to me that, you know, maybe a couple people have been arrested, but overall, I don't see a lot of changes. What changes are you thinking are going to happen for these folks? And either one of you are free to answer that.
I think that there was some legislation passed recently, pushed by Peter Neumer from the Office of the Inspector General.
Yes.
Making it a reportable crime a reportable issue if you're found to have covering up or obstructing obstructing an investigation, then you can be put on the healthcare worker registry. Currently, there was not. And I think we saw a lot of that. You know, I think there have been a lot of whistleblowers. And there are people in the community who know that this had been going on for a very long time, unobstructed. Like, and that's what's fascinating to me. Like, how did nobody say anything about this?
Yeah, it's incredible that people haven't said anything. Molly, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I would just say, I mean, it's well known, I'm sure, to you and your listeners, and we hear this all the time from the advocacy organizations, that Illinois in general is just really far behind on this issue. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of what we've seen is, I think, some tinkering around the edges to fix things. I'm not saying they're not meaningful. You know, the new legislation, I think that, you know, the new safety officer they've appointed, they're installing cameras across the system. Certainly there are things going on that will make a difference. I wonder how, you know, until maybe there's a real conversation or a push in Illinois to do something significant, I don't know that you're going to see much more than sort of incremental improvements. I mean, I think that all eyes are on Choate right now, and to a degree, the other facilities that we've highlighted. But you know, that attention seems to ebb and flow. So, sure, right now there's some heightened scrutiny on things. You know, staff may be trying to be on better behavior, if you will. But I think some of what's going on in my estimation, it's not that there's a bunch of evildoers, that these things that are embedded inside these facilities, and really you do see it to different degrees across the system, have to do with these big congregate settings and lack of staff, lack of support, lack of meaningful things for people to do, lack of meaningful, therapy and things like that for people who need that. And so I think that it's not like there's just this, one place that, oh, all these bad people work there. I think that this is a real systemic issue about the way Illinois prioritize the treatment of people with developmental disabilities.
Yeah, or not. Because that's what I'm seeing right now. From your reporting, it's becoming very clear to me that, you know, a basic need of people in their lives is safety. If they don't have safety, then they can't have any quality of life at all. So how do we guarantee that people are safe in this kind of situation? Do you have people coming to you to tell you these stories? Or, you know, how are you gathering all this information?
Beth? Go for it.
I think we've gotten a lot of it from the Office of the Inspector General. I think, and from people who are, be honest, I don't think that everybody who works in the facility is a cold, uncaring person. There's a lot at play when you work at one of these facilities.
Oh, for sure.
You know, there's a lot of interreliance on each other as a workforce. Like, if I have an issue, I want you to come to my side. But it's also sort of bred this idea that, like, it's us against them. It's very much an adversarial relationship, and I'm not sure, you know, I think that's sort of like perpetuating that cover-up thing. In the stress of working very, very long hours. And, you know, I think we need to not be remiss and say some of these people have come into care because they're in crisis. I mean, if you could head off the crisis, there would be no need, right? Or if there could be some kind of way to have support at home or in the community, maybe they wouldn't have to come into care at places like SHOAD.
Oh, absolutely. But I want to push back a little bit on it's us against them. Who are the them that they're pushing against?
Well, I think the workers versus the patients. And there's this idea that, you know, some people are dangerous, or I'm going to do what I have to do to make this person be compliant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And without probably appropriate training to deal with those kinds of things, too, because as understaffed as the institutions are, they don't have an opportunity to get people together to do extensive learning, right?
Yeah, I mean, we've even seen reports of people, when we were looking into some of the other facilities, being put onto the floor prior to having their training completed. You know, there would be write-ups of that in health department records or inspector general records, where people, you know, and what I would hear from the employees is, well, people are being rushed through training, or where they should be having more on-the-job supervision, there's not enough people. So suddenly you're kind of just, you know, pretty early on in your career put into situations that you're not familiar with the job, or maybe have had no experience or little with people with developmental disabilities. So you're, when there's a behavior, you react. You don't know how to react in an appropriate way to calm the situation. And, you know, it talked about people not reading people's plans where they describe things that can calm a person down. Like, yes, this person has this behavior. If something triggers them, here's some things you can do to try to offset that. Instead of, sometimes I think their reaction amps up the situation. And then, you know, before you know it, there's a tussle and an overreaction, an over physical reaction on behalf of, you know, staff. And again, sometimes the resident is also physical because they're reacting to the situation. So I think that, yes, the lack of staffing contributes to lack of adequate training, too much overtime, like way too much, you know, stress, people under stress that are put into these situations where they need to be at their best, and they're just not.
Yeah, and
and when things have gone on for a very long time, there sort of seems to be a shift in what's normal, right?
Yeah, I would assume so. But I want to echo what you said earlier in that there are a lot of people who work at these facilities who are good, caring people who do the right thing for the people that they're supporting. But if they're not going to come forward and tell the truth about what's happening with other caregivers at those facilities, then that's a real issue.
Right. Yeah. Agreed.
So let's talk a little bit about, one thing that really disturbs me about SHOAT and the system of SODCs in the state of Illinois is that the expense of supporting one person with a developmental disability who lives in that setting annually costs the state of Illinois over $300,000. I don't know, I know people will respond to the allegations of abuse and say, oh, isn't that awful? But when you think about it, you know, how well could somebody be supported out in a community setting if they had that force of of financial support following them there? And, you know, how easy would it be to build up that system of supports in the community if that money was available for all people with disabilities to benefit from?
Well, this is the great debate, right? I mean, and I say debate, I don't exactly know why it's such a debate in Illinois. Many other states have made this move. It's always controversial because it is, and I want to reflect, to be sensitive to people who either they or their loved one have, you know, lived in these facilities now for most of their adult life, right? And now they're maybe 40, 50, 60 years old. That's a really difficult transition. And then mm-hmm. you have guardians who are aging, who are scared of what might be out there. We've seen horror stories when they close other facilities of people moving out into settings that were, you know, not prepared for them. It doesn't mean they couldn't be, right? It doesn't mean Illinois couldn't offer those services for people, but they failed to in some cases. So then you've got that in the background. You know, I think that you always see the union very opposed to any sort of transition, even if there could be a role for even state-operated villas or, you know, the use of state employees and other means of serving folks, you know, near where they live right now. But it's almost like a non-starter in Illinois. There's been some of that discussion, but as you know, that was over a decade ago, and no one has wanted to touch that broader question.
I think there's a lot more conversation about it because of the work that the two of you have done. And that Barry has done with writing his book. The people are more aware now of what's happening, but it seems to me that nothing really changes unless there's a big lawsuit. That's kind of the way Illinois works. Do you see anything like that developing in your work?
Well, the Ligas Light lawsuit covers, you know, there is a motion right now before the court to keep people who are in crisis out of SODCs because of the safety factor. I mean, we see lots of, I know I've talked to at least two or three family members who have had loved ones who are in SHOAT, and with the proper support, they could have kept their loved one at home.
Mm-hmm.
And would have preferred to keep them at home. So I don't know exactly if a lawsuit would change things. I think there has been efforts to have the consent decree under Ligas dismissed, but that hasn't come to fruition yet. So I think we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So what is your next step in working on this story? I'm assuming and hoping that you will continue the work. Do you have another investigation in progress?
We don't have one, you know, right at this moment that we're ready to, you know, say, here's what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We are, I would just say, you know, to you and your listeners, we're always interested in hearing from people who have story tips or ideas that they think we should pursue on this topic. It's obviously far from settled and done. I think that, you know, we are seeing, it seems like, a new flurry of activity. I think it's interesting you asked this earlier, you know, where we get our information. And of course we have, you know, Beth and I have both been reporters a long time, so we have all sorts of avenues that we go after information. But I will say that much of this, sort of the hard facts of the cases, come from the department's own records or those of the health department, which are also, you know, shared with the department. So it's interesting. And the governor's office and state police records, everyone in the executive branch has access to everything we've seen. So it's not like we've exposed something that they wouldn't know about. I think we exposed something that the public didn't know about. But it's interesting that they, you know, it's not until we really sort of put it out there did you see this flurry of activity and response. So I'm hopeful that we'll continue to see, you know, changes and things that we can focus on and highlight. Hopefully some for the positive about, you know, what may come about, even, you know, maybe there's going to be discussions in the legislative session. You know, that's up to the lawmakers, of course. But hopefully these are things that get on the radar and get a renewed discussion, because it seems like this topic in the public sphere sort of quieted down after, you know, the Quinn administration sought to close the facilities, and it seems like people moved on from that somewhat, as far as, not obviously people who pay attention to this, live it, work it, but the general population.
Yeah, but you know, you talked earlier about how people with disabilities often find transition difficult. And I think we can put administrators at the state of Illinois in that same category, because they do tend to, as you say, do tweaks around the edges rather than really digging into what the meat of the problem is and to go take big steps to make that better. Thoughts?
I think that's a fair statement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, well, as time progresses, I think, I think people do want to solve this problem, but there's a number of factors that come into play. You have legislators and who want to keep jobs in their area. You mm-hmm. have parents who need care. You have unions who represent the people who work there. It's just a kind of compactor of issues, and with, unfortunately, the people who are most vulnerable in the middle.
Yeah, and people who depend on those situations to supposedly keep their family member safe, which is certainly not a guarantee in our world today. So I know there's a new director of developmental disabilities at the state. Have you had a chance to have a conversation with her yet?
I have not.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe that will be your next area to explore for sure.
She's not really new to the game. She's been, I think she was at most recently in Alt Mental Health and in Kentucky and in Missouri. She's been in the biz for a little while. So, mm-hmm.
In states where maybe they've closed institutions or not, do you know that?
Well, I'm not aware. No, I don't know.
Yeah, that would be interesting if they brought somebody in who had some experience with that, because I think that is definitely the direction that needs to be taken. It's just that, as you say, it's very complicated in Illinois with the unions and the legislators and the people who have been running these institutions for years and years and years don't necessarily want to make it different. They just want to make it, stable, I think.
I think that's true. And to sympathize with some of the families who are nervous about a move or adamantly opposed to it, I think one of the it's on Illinois, if they were going to do something significant in line with national trends, in line with best practices, to show them that there is something out there where their loved one can receive what is adequate and better care, right? It's not a matter of just like, oh, we're going to close it all down and you're going to just be sort of thrown out into the wind. Wherever you get picked up, you get picked up. I mean, if you do this right, it's a deliberative process where you see what it would look like and you feel it and the individual has time to transition and see it and make a what they call a meaningful choice, not just ask, oh, do you want to move, and they say no, because move where and move into what and what, and some
right.
people may have had bad experiences in the past in areas where the system wasn't set up to support them. So I think you have to have a system built up first to offer that meaningful choice, and then
you have to
really give it to people. Yeah, right now people are like,
you have to make sure
this,
that system is safe too. There are good SILAs and there are bad SILAs. So you have to make sure that system that you're moving people into is safe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a challenge as well. But the state of Illinois does have a system for doing person-centered planning for individuals. They're not using it at the SODCs, I don't think. But it is one of those things where you talk to the person and the people who love them about what it is that makes them happy, what are their gifts and abilities and their hopes and dreams and what are their needs for support. And then to figure out a situation for them that works, that is not in the institution. And it can be done, but it takes a whole different mindset to make it happen. So I certainly appreciate your work. Maybe it's the SILAs that you start checking into next. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah,
maybe. It's a worthwhile pursuit. I mean, certainly they, the safety issues are not exclusive. We know that, you know, the safety issues.
Yeah.
Like two issues here, right? The civil rights issue about where people live and the safety issue about them, people having the right to safety no matter where they live. And that's obviously a problem on, I think, on both.
And to know that safety is the basic right of a person, that there is so much more that they can have in their lives to make a better quality of life that they're just not getting right now because they don't have the safety that they need. So that's a problem. Where do people go before we run out of time here, ladies? Where do people go if they want to read your articles and follow up on the information that they've heard today?
They can go to capitalnewsillinois.com, and it is capital with an O, not an A.
Capital News Illinois, that's all one word?
Yep.
.com. And mm-hmm. I will put that link up on the Disability Beat Facebook page. I just want to thank you again for all the time and effort and the work that you've put into this. It is the most important thing between you and Barry and his book, the two most important things that have happened to promote the health and well-being and safety of people with the most significant needs in the state of Illinois. So thank you so much for that work.
Thank you, Vicki. And Barry's been doing this for a really long time. He's very committed to vulnerable people, vulnerable population.
I know that for sure. So I thank the two of you and thank Barry as well, Beth Hunsdorfer and Molly Parker of Capital News Illinois. And thank you for your important work.
Until next time, Vicki. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. You are tuned. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, and you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Coming up next is Food Sleuth Radio. But before that, hey, you know, it's one of our favorite events during the entire year. WEFT Fest 2023 is coming up. We hope you'll join us on Sunday, October 1st for our annual WEFT Listener Appreciation and Anniversary Celebration. It's a street party on North Market Street in downtown Champaign. You can bring your family and friends from 2 to 6 p.m. for great food and drink available at Seven Saints, WEFT merchandise, raffle, our traditional CD sale, cake, and live music from local favorites, including Kayla Brown, Sean Kutzko's Broadmoor Bunch, Bandonian Massacre, and finishing off the evening, the K-Tells. Come help us celebrate 42 years of Prairie Air Radio. Don't miss WEFT Fest 2023 on Sunday, October 1st. We'll all be there. Hope you are too. And now we're going to go ahead and get started with Food Sleuth Radio. So stay tuned for that and other great programs here on WEFT. Mm-hmm.